You're listening to 2 Year Health, brought to you by Hamilton's on the Downtown Mall. 2 Year Health is heard every Saturday morning at 11 on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. MC will be right back after these messages.
This is MC Blair. This is Saturday morning, and I have a great guest here, Michael Riley of Foodways. That's an app that you can download. And one of the things that he does, actually, the thing that he does, I'll let him talk a little bit more about Foodways in a moment, but he connects people that are very health conscious and very conscious of community-based agriculture and the various farms and sources for that that supply to restaurants. So if you're very conscious about that and you still want to go out to eat and you don't want a restaurant that gets everything from one of these big suppliers, then Foodways is the way to find that out. So welcome, Michael Riley.
Thank you, Mike. Am I on?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah. Good morning. Thank you, Mike, for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity. This is great. And look forward to chatting quite a bit about food and the local food scene and agriculture and healthy eating and all that stuff. So Foodways is a project I've been working on now for about 3 years. I had no previous background in food other than consuming it. I had a previous background in the broadcast TV business, and long story short, I got into food mostly because I was concerned about my own personal health, and I just started doing a lot of research on my own, understanding more about what it takes to eat healthy and to live healthy. And as I began that journey, I became increasingly frustrated with the availability of tools out there, particularly on mobile phones, to find sources of healthy food. And there are some great organizations out there providing this information, Local Harvest, by Fresh, by Local, and so that's great. They're doing a great job, but I think still, in terms of trying to cut through the clutter of mobile apps and information available to the consumer, most people, I think, tend to default to Yelp, particularly when they're traveling around. And that's really what I was doing, was searching Yelp and trying to Google, and I just had so much difficulty finding information. So I decided that I would try to tackle this problem, and I partnered up my co-founder of Foodways, a gentleman by the name of Lou Foster, and he and I partnered together. He does the technical stuff, and I do the business development and content, and I had a lot to learn. I dove headfirst, literally, into the food scene, everything from restaurants to farms to producers, you name it. And I realized this really started at the farm level, and it's been an evolution. And I think that it's still quite a bit of work in progress, for sure. And we're still trying to feel our way because of the fact that so much is changing and evolving. And that's good. I mean, so many positive developments out there in our understanding of food and the connections that food has to so many other areas of our life. And we'll talk about this, and I know you're very well versed in soil health and climate change and so many issues that really tie back into food. And so what we are really focusing on, I think, are two words that I say repeatedly when I talk to people. Soil and gut. And the connection between the soil under our feet and our digestive tract is just mind-boggling, something that nobody ever really thought about much, except for people really on the fringes, until just, you know, the last several years. And the connection between the microorganisms that exist in our soil and then the billions that also exist in our human bodies is really what is what makes us thrive on this earth. It's how we live. We wouldn't be able to live without those tiny microorganisms. And
that's
so
true.
That's really what we're focusing on. And so it starts at the farm level. And we are identifying those farms, local farms that are producing nutrient-dense food through practices, again, that respect the soil and try to build soil fertility through organic regenerative practices. Regeneration is another big word out there that's developing as a sort of a keystone word. And animal welfare, raising animals outside where they belong, which is something that most people don't recognize as being so vital
to
our health.
And of course, the animals are key to the soil regeneration, and you used the term regenerative agriculture. I had not heard that until recently. Prior to this, it was like organic, sustainably grown, a biodynamic, and all that sort of thing. And of course, I looked at the biodynamic model, which of course treated the entire farm, including all the animals, all the workers, everything about the farm as one living organism. And that really made sense to me. Mm-hmm. And so from that, this word of course, biodynamic is extremely strict, you know, extremely strict rules to be a certified biodynamic farm. But if somebody simply grows their crops, the animals come through, they graze, they fertilize, they do all that. The chickens follow the bovine, which you'll hear a little bit later. And in my segment of Saturday at the Market, I talked with Daniel Klein from Farfield's farm in Afton, and they are very much that way.
Oh, yeah.
And so regenerative agriculture really, to me, hits it. It hits it right on the money, because that's exactly what you're doing. You are regenerating that soil. And, of course, big ag across the nation destroys the topsoil totally. And so that's why they have to put in, obviously, all those chemicals and kind of fake soil. And guess what happens when you grow something in fake soil? You have fake food. Yeah. Looks like it, but it's actually not only not nutritious, but it saps nutrition from your body. And that's a fact, guys. That's, oh my goodness, so important. So regenerative soil and regenerative practice, and that's the definition of sustainability as well.
Yeah, it really is. And it's, you know, you sort of have a little bit of hesitancy, I think, when you start throwing out new words, because I think people are kind of weary of the lingo that's out there, and everything from sustainable, local, organic, all these words. So it is something that I find myself sometimes being a little self-conscious about it. But the reality is that the term regenerative is not some new gimmick.
It's not
fundamental to the way this planet has really existed since it first came about billions of years ago. And this cycle of regeneration, of death and renewal, is really, again, sort of grounded in the soil. Pun intended,
yes.
You know, and so that is really what is so energizing, I think, when you really look at what's happening in the food scene, because there's so much recognition now of the importance of this. And so whether you're growing crops or raising animals or ideally doing both, I think that the focus on building back the health of our world around this issue of soil is fundamental. And again, it extends far beyond the food that we eat on our plate. There are issues beyond food that tie into this concept. Again, climate change, of course, is one of them. Social and political issues are also very much tied into this, because if you look historically at the world, civilizations that have destroyed their soil and have failed to feed their populace have essentially gone away.
Yeah,
and so what we're finding is that if we as a country can't do this, we're not going to last forever either. And on top of that, you look at a lot of the civil strife. It is often, look, food is a fundamental element of human nature. We need food. We, you know, it's like
real food.
Real food.
Absolutely.
And so our quest for food is always tops on our mind. And so when you have parts of the world that have literally lost their ability to grow food because of desertification and lack of healthy soil, it does contribute to civil strife and the rise of civil war and people just getting so disenchanted with their life that they, you know, easily turn to terrorism. And so there is a lot of certainly a lot of research and many people, experts on that particular type of who study this stuff really will verify.
Well, actually, yeah, absolutely. Oh, by the way, folks, you're listening to Your Health right here on 11 to 12 every Saturday morning, brought to you in part by Hamilton's at First and Main and Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Right here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we're talking with Michael Riley of Foodways app. Now, also, Michael, I read a book recently, Jared Diamond, Collapse, and he speaks to that so much. One of his examples was, I believe, Iceland, and some people from Europe came over there, and they made these settlements. And they were having real problems surviving the winters. And so the Icelandic people came down there and they said, oh, well, here's what you have to do. Here's what you have to do. But, of course, the Europeans were going, ah, what do you know? What do you know? We're this, we're that. And, of course, they disappeared. The settlement was gone. And, of course, the Inuits are still there just, coming along just the way they are. And on that same note, people in those climes... they'll eat like 80% or 90% blubber. And, and every once in a while they get a little fruit.
Yeah.
And so, but yet they're hardy.
Yeah.
And you take the same people and you stick them, someplace else and just give them all veggies and stuff and they're not going to survive. So whereas people in the savannah or, in Africa, a lot of times they're eating almost all vegetables, very little meat. It's kind of hard to come by. It's hard to hunt. And they're fine. And so that's why we stress here the local, because if you're eating locally, you're eating what's grown right there that's indigenous, you're indigenous, and therefore it's more, you have a better chance of being compatible to your system, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, there's no doubt about that.
It is so important to tap into that scene, as long as they're doing it, sustainably and or regeneratively, because you can still put Roundup on a local field. And, yeah, it's local, but it's still going to be bad for your body overall, bad for your general health.
Yeah, without a doubt, there certainly is no formula. That is, I think, one of the challenges going forward as we continue to try to direct people in a certain way toward what they should be eating. There is a classic discussion is, what's better, something grown locally with chemicals or something grown organically coming in from California, when you look at carbon footprint and all these different issues that are involved. And you start sort of parsing out that discussion, you're going to just get lost in the giant black hole of food, as I like to say. So it really does, again, take more takes a holistic sort of view as to how to approach all of this, and ideally, again, eating local food, eating food that is grown for a certain region. Berries are a great example. I mean, berries are very healthy, and they grow a lot of organic berries all year long out in California. We don't get many berries around here. Even the ones that are in season, they're very, very short-lived, particularly those who are trying to grow them organically, because it is very challenging, given the fact that we have a humid climate here, and it is tough to grow berries. So how often should we be eating berries? That's tough, because you certainly have a lot of nutritional wisdom will tell you to eat your fruits and vegetables. And so that's just one example, but it is, again, it's just very difficult to come up with any kind of formula. And it speaks to one of the challenges I've had with Foodways, even in regard to restaurants and other food businesses. There's not a set formula. It just is, oftentimes comes down to intent, and what I like to say is really a true advocacy for a certain way of food. And that, again, gets down to the farm level too. I mean, all farmers
Absolutely.
Are different. Some of them do till and some of them don't till, and some of them are kind of tilling, and it's hard to say like, oh, that's, you're no good because you're tilling. I know you've mentioned tilling before. It's the first time I brought it up, but that's a whole nother subject.
Well, it is.
But, that's something that, again, you have to sort of look at the whole picture.
You do.
And that's
you do.
Really,
and I know at Broad Mountain Farms. It's called something.
Broadhead Mountain Farms.
Yeah. Sorry, Wally and Susan.
Yeah, yes, they're wonderful. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he tills, but he doesn't like do that deep tilling type. He just enough to, you know, and so when you have an industrial farm with those great big machines and all that, every time they pull, you know, 2 feet of soil and turn it over, all that carbon gets released. Mm-hmm. And so, and carbon sequestration is so important. So you can, you can till a little, you know, just enough to, you know, sort of rough the soil up and get those seeds planted. And then that's, you know, okay, especially the way they do it there. And so, and you were mentioning berries and all that, raspberries, black, all the polyphenols, which, you know, very important, right? Very important.
Definitely.
But, so I wanted to play a little bit of what we did at City Market today.
Great. Yeah.
Just a couple of minutes, then we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back to that. Well, it looks like we had another technical difficulty. Great. Well, we're batting 1,000 here.
Gotta have technical difficulties.
Oh, I know. Right?
Got to. Yeah, it wouldn't be right if you didn't.
I know. All right. This was. Farm stand, and we're going to be talking with Nate from Bel Air Farm. I've been there. It's on the Hardware River in southern Albemarle. Beautiful, beautiful farm. And Jamie is one of the owners there, and he took me on a tour. Tell me about Bel Air Farm, Nate.
We're a big CSA in town. We have about 450 members, and we have 30 acres in production. Mostly we do vegetables, but we have quite a few livestock as well, pigs, chickens, and beef cows. There's a cheese operation on the property as well. Yeah, I think we're the biggest CSA in town, and we're always here at the Saturday market from 7 to 12, and then at the Mead Market on Wednesdays as well.
And where's the Mead Market?
It's at
Mead Park, right there off Carlton, is that it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yep. Right here in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
So I understand that you have some sharing with other farmers, is that correct? Different meats and that sort of thing?
Yeah, we have a beef operation that we lease our pasture out to, and he rotates through some of our vegetable fields as well to help us with like our fertility and stuff. And then we also have 20 Paces, and they're a dairy operation, and they all sheep and goat, and they turn all their milk into cheese.
I wanted to say that using the animals on a produce farm is part of that regenerative agriculture that we were talking about earlier. We're going to take a little break here, and we will be back shortly. Sorry, we're back. More technical. Hey, we're going to get this thing right. I'll tell you that. Just wanted to say we had a glitch. I had the last week's in there, and we were talking to Bel Air Farm, which they're a great farm. If you guys ever chance to get down there and see them, they're open to tours pretty much all the time. You just got to let them know you're coming. But I'm going to now play what I did this morning, what the interviews I did this morning with the great folks at the City Market. So without further ado, we'll do it.
Good morning. This is MC Blair. I'm at the Charlottesville City Market down on Water Street, where I come every week, most weeks, while it's open. And I'm at Bel Air Farm stand, and we're going to be talking with Nate from Bel Air Farm. I've been there. It's on the Hardware River in southern Albemarle. Beautiful, beautiful farm. And Jamie is one of the owners there, and he took me on a tour. Tell me about Bel Air Farm, Nate.
We're a big CSA in town. We have about 450 members, and we have 30 acres in production. Mostly we do vegetables, but we have quite a few livestock as well, pigs, chickens, and beef cows. There's a cheese operation on the property as well. Yeah, I think we're the biggest CSA in town. And we're always here at the Saturday market from 7 to 12, and then at the Mead Market on Wednesdays as well.
And where's the Mead Market?
It's at
Mead Park, right there off Carlton, is that it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yep. Right here in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
So I understand that you have some sharing with other farmers, is that correct? Different meats and that sort of thing?
Yeah, we have a beef operation that we lease our pasture out to, and he rotates through some of our vegetable fields as well to help us with like our fertility and stuff. And then we also have 20 Paces, and they're a dairy operation, and they all sheep and goat, and they turn all their milk into cheese, and they rotate through our vegetable fields as well.
That's awesome. So without having animals, you have been able to successfully have the model that the animals and the vegetables all are one living organism,
yeah,
the farm.
A full circle. And then our operation as well has a flock of hens, and then we do meat chickens and then the pigs. And we rotate both the meat birds and the laying hens through our vegetable fields as well.
That is so good. So how long have you been with Bel Air Farm, Nate?
This is my second year, and I'll be coming back next year. Yeah.
Okay. What are your plans for the future?
I'd like to be involved in sustainable agriculture, I think, and make a career out of it. I'm not sure if I want to be an owner of a farm or, you know, manage another person's farm or an already existing farm, but I think we'll just have to see.
Yeah, you're young. You've got plenty of time, you know. So that's really cool because we need more people in agriculture to supply real food to Charlottesville. And let me get your opinion on something. I've always maintained that if the city fathers got together and decided that they were going to do what it was ever necessary to provide real food to maybe folks less fortunate that have low access or even no access to real food, if they were to buy into that and do what they had to do to provide real food during the winter, and then in the summer, obviously, let the farmers do what they do, do you think that's a viable solution?
I think maybe a combination of plans, you know, might be able to come into act. You know, maybe people understanding more about local food and having some education around that.
So education, right.
Yeah, and just sort of understanding what it means to eat locally. I think that it is possible to provide the community with fresh produce, maybe not quite year-round, but almost year-round,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of greens and things that do a little better in cooler climates. I'm not sure what that would look like, but I would be interested to see or hear any plans.
So when I was there visiting with Jamie and you guys, I noticed a school bus there with a lot of kids running around, and it looked like they were having a ball. So what does that program look like?
It's not so much of a program as, you know, any school is welcome to contact us and try and figure out or schedule a day to come out and volunteer for a little while and get a tour of the farm. And we also have St. Anne's Belfield comes out for a whole week, and, you know, every single day we have another class out. So from K through 8 we get all the grades. So yeah, anyone is always welcome to just sort of contact Jamie and anyone who's affiliated with the school, and we can figure out some sort of date for them to come out.
And that's Jamie at Bel Air Farm. How do they contact him?
If you were just to look up Bel Air Farm, you'd find his email pretty quick.
Thank you very much, Nate. I am at the Hog Haven Farm stand, and we're talking with one half of that great team at Hog Haven Farm, Verde Schaefer and Rob Staples. Hey, Verde, how's it going today?
It's going good. How are you?
Doing very well. How's business?
Business is good.
Got to be good.
Yeah.
That's great. And so why is business so good?
Yeah. Well, we sell our pork. We've been selling really well.
Pastured pork, right?
Pasture-raised, yep. Heritage breed, animal welfare certified, of course. We also do a breakfast sandwich that's gained a lot of popularity.
And it's great. That's what I'm getting.
Yep.
Now, you guys have this farm stand as well as one in Northern Virginia and on the James in Richmond, right?
Right. South of the James Market in Forest Hill Park.
So, Verde, tell us a little bit about your famous sandwich.
We use our pasteurized pork, our pasteurized egg, grass-fed cheddar cheese, and a locally baked English muffin.
man, that sounds delicious. And I was here the other day, and one of your customers said the best thing about it was the aioli.
Yeah, it is. It's addictive.
Yep. I like Rob's special sauce, quite frankly.
Yep. We call that the Hossam sauce.
Hossam sauce?
Hossam.
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 Hossam with an H.
Yes.
Got it. So I am talking with a couple of customers, hungry customers, here at Hog Haven Farm Stand. What keeps you coming back?
We end up coming here for breakfast most Saturdays. It's quiet here in the mornings, early, and the food's really good.
Great. So I take it eating real food, pastured eggs, pastured poultry, pastured pork, is important to you guys. Is that correct?
Yes. It's good to know where your food comes from.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, I was just going to add, it is important to us, and although sometimes it's not as easy on the weekdays with crazy hectic schedules, it is nice to be able to have an option on the weekend and still support what we think is a good value for the community and for ourselves.
You mentioned community. We here on To Your Health are always talking about community-based agriculture, working with the community and all the different farmers. So that's important to you?
Yeah, I think it's really nice to be able to support each other. So
I agree. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So now we're coming up to a sweet farm stand. Cocoa and spice. Chocolate is their specialty. And I'm talking with Jennifer
Moet.
And she is the owner of this stand. So tell us about what you're doing with chocolate.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for chatting with me today.
My pleasure.
Yeah, no, I just really love chocolate, and so I use it as an ingredient to make really delicious treats. I absolutely love hot chocolate, so I make these drinking chocolate mixes that I'm taking actual chocolate, grinding it down with some unsweetened cocoa powder to make it a little bit less sweet and extra delicious. And then I'm also using different spices. I make a Mexican hot chocolate with chipotle chili and cinnamon, coconut and curry clusters, chili mango that I dip in dark chocolate. Just to kind of keep things interesting. I have a Cajun bark as well, which is white chocolate, which is traditionally super sweet, but I add some heat to it with Creole seasoning and macadamia nuts.
Oh my gosh, that sounds delicious. I love spice too. So the cocoa that you buy, I understand that's you deal with a company that deals with fair trade farms, is that?
Yeah, so I'm a chocolatier, so I purchase chocolate from a European chocolate maker who works directly with cacao plantations around the world. In some cases, I use a blend of beans, and in other cases, I'm using single origin chocolate. I have one from Tanzania, and I have another one from Guayaquil that I use for some of my chocolate bars.
Oh, man. So I'm picking up a cocoa pod.
This is a cocoa pod that's been dried out. Normally, there would be a pulp inside that gets fermented off, but this has been dried inside of the beans, and the beans are what are roasted, ground, and turned into chocolate.
It's really neat. So, I don't know if you guys can hear this, but those are the beans rattling around in the pod. Sounds like we could do some salsa music here, you know? I feel like dancing.
You get all the senses with chocolate. So.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jennifer. Really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
How's business so far?
It's been going really well, and I have a new storefront where people can come and shop over on Stewart Street,
right?
Which is between Mead Ave and East High Street. So you just go to cocoaandspice.com, and you can find all the info.
Thanks. So now we are talking. You're listening to Your Health right here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Now streaming live. Just use the numbers 947, then WPVC.org, and click the Listen Live button that you will see when that pops up. Talking with Elena's Pies and Produce, and we're talking to Elena herself, and the sign says vegetables grown without chemical pesticides, fertilizers, or herbicides ever. And that's important.
That's right. And
thank you.
Yeah, I guess you guys are asking.
Take some time for a little commerce here. So why is that important to you without the chemicals, you know, all that sort of thing?
Well, it's a health concern. And first off, I don't think that pesticides are particularly good for people. I also feel that it's important to nourish your soil by using cover cropping and rotating these cover crops back into the soil rather than adding fertilizers, which are generally based from petroleum products and whatever. And we have a real problem in this country regarding agriculture and the way big ag is with regarding loss of topsoil. There is no fertility or life within the soil. Microorganisms just probably don't do too well in the way that conventional agriculture is practiced, and we just don't have healthy soils. We're losing our soils, and all the soil that are pesticided and over-fertilized, that is seeping out of the soil when it rains heavily into our waterways, causing additional problems. Like, you know, you hear about saving the bay. Well, this is a way to promote saving our streams and then, of course, the bay in the end here in Virginia.
That is so important, and you are right about we have been raping the earth.
Yes, I'm a proponent of regenerative agriculture. Hey, Allie.
Regenerative agriculture, which is also part of the biodynamic model.
Yeah.
The farm as a...
He's interviewing.
The farm as a living whole.
Yeah.
A living organism.
You're welcome to... He promotes commerce while he talks to people.
Absolutely. Commerce is very important.
Yes.
Yeah. Good morning.
I read an article that was entitled, Squirmy Soil is the Best.
I think it is indeed, because I would guarantee that if you check the soils of many conventional farmers, that there would be very little in it, especially when they are promoting Roundup in their cropping of corn and soy, which is, you know, primary agricultural crops, it seems to be here in Virginia. And also when you don't cover crop and then till this green manure back into your soil, you find that the soil it's not enriched. I mean, you know, an enriched soil really holds moisture better. It contributes to the health of the plant. I think runoff is probably decreased when you have a enriched soil rather than one that is...
We need soil more like a sponge,
yeah,
rather than a hard pan runoff.
Yeah, yeah. Although that, you know, the whole idea between Roundup Ready is that you don't have to till, you just spray it to death.
Understand.
Yeah, and dry it out.
Yes. I'm here at the Carpe Donut Farm Stand with owner Matt Rohde, and I've known Matt for a number of years, and he just told me I could ask him for anything, or ask him anything I like, and so I asked him for money, and he said, well, you can ask me that, but I think you know the answer anyway. So Matt, tell me about what you've been doing with your distribution company, Perfect Harmony.
Absolutely. Now, we've nice to see you, Mike.
Thank you.
I've been working with selling the Carpe Donuts on Amazon.com, as an alternative to selling through the grocery stores. We like to distribute locally with a local food hub, but like a lot of small companies which have a innovative product to sell, we'd like to expand the market and go further afield. We're looking at Amazon as a very disruptive mechanism to go directly to our customers. And so we've been successfully distributing with them multiple cases a week at a really nice cost point, because our Perfect Harmony distribution model is a collaborative model between producers, a second company that will help manage a relationship with Amazon. So we've got several of our local producers currently working on setting up that distribution. We should have 4 to 5 local food producers being sold through Perfect Harmony over the next month or so.
That is great. Sort of like the community of commerce.
Absolutely.
Community is important. Now, I know that you, when you started Carpe Donut, you were using pasture-raised eggs, organic sugar, organic flour, and you're still doing that, right?
All still true there. We've added organic spices. We didn't start with organic sugar. That was something we were able to layer in as we went along. Some of it has to do with the access to distribution. Ironically, the absolute least expensive place and most reliable place for me to buy organic sugar is our local neighborhood, Costco. I've got relationships with big national distributors for a lot of these commodities. quantities. But right now, for instance, I'm interviewing for a new organic cocoa powder because Frontier Herbs that I used to get from UNFI doesn't make organic cocoa powder anymore. I got to find something new.
How do you treat your workers, Matt? Every time I see them, they're smiling. What's up with that?
Well, mostly they're hopefully smiling because they're mostly my family. But since we've crossed that threshold into having employees, we really wanted to have a principle of a living wage. I think the living wage movement is one that's going to come back around many times in Charlottesville as a city that's concerned with things like social justice and, you know, the impact of business on the community environment. So I also think it's important just to pay people very well and ask a lot of them whenever possible. But we've had a living wage commitment within our company's model for the last 10 years.
That is so admirable.
It's not necessarily purely altruistic. It's something that we need to have a smaller number of more engaged people, because what we do, ironically, is kind of complicated. It's simply making donuts and organic coffee, but we're often setting up mobile operations. We're traveling pretty far from Charlottesville, and I got to put together a team of people who can do that with a lot of initiative, a lot of ability to keep things safe and make things run efficiently.
So I guess what you found is that by paying people a living wage, you get not only more out of them, but care about the business more.
Well, I was an employee for 30 years before I ever started a business, and I think that when people aren't making enough to live, it's very distracting. It's really hard to operate in the world when you don't have enough money to make ends meet. So.
We are going to take another break here. We will be back with our guest, Michael Riley of Foodways, and we'll be back. And we are back. We're talking with Michael Riley. One of the things, Michael, that I would do, I would go to restaurants that I know would source as much local as possible, and I would ask the waiter, well, what farm did this come from? And so if he knew it came from a farm, a local farm, he would say, you know, I'm not sure. Let me check. He would go right in, and he would come back with an answer. When it's like, and I won't mention any places, but self-reporting is only good so far. So I understand you take that before you list a restaurant or recommend a restaurant. You go to some extra steps.
Yeah, Mike, that's exactly it. And it goes back to the very beginning when I saw this as a tool to recommend restaurants and cafes and markets or whatever. I realized that to do that and to be different and to really solve the problem that I identified was I need to understand what was actually going on at the farm. So if you walk into a restaurant and you see on the menu or on a blackboard that they're using certain farms, that's great, looks good, but what does that really mean? Number one, are they really truly using those farms? And number two, what's happening on those farms? So I actually dove, as I said, head first into the world of agriculture and just started going to a number of different farms. And I believe by last count, I visited about 75 farms throughout Virginia, most of them around central Virginia. And it's really one of the most rewarding things that I do. It also is one of the more challenging things because there are so many. The good news is there are a lot of farmers out there who are practicing, you know, regenerative eco-agriculture, and it's hard to get around to all of them. So we're really continuing to work through that as to how to best tackle that challenge. But it does really speak to, again, I think, the value of what we're trying to bring, which is to say that if a restaurant sources pork from a certain farm, what is actually happening on that farm? And so, again, the farmers around here are just such delightful people, and they're so energetic. There have been so many that I'd be remiss if I started mentioning them, because I know I'd leave so many out, and that wouldn't be fair. But they're just wonderful farmers around here, and it's just so amazing to go out and see what they do. And once you go out there, you can really get a feel for, you know, what's happening on the farm. And we're not about, you know, we don't go out there with some checklist. We don't grill them, you know, on the sort of the finer points of what they're trying to achieve. We're really just all about trying to identify, again, from more of a sort of an overview, holistic standpoint, what they're doing. And if you go to a farm and you see lush pastures and you see, you know, crops that are being grown, you know, again, using principles of cover crops and row covers and things, the tools of the organic trade, then you pretty much know. And just by talking to farmers, you know. I mean, as soon as they start talking about what they do, you can sense that passion and where it's all coming from.
That's what I was just going to say. Every time I visited a farm in the local area that was doing that were doing things the right way, the passion just shows. And you know, you could say, well, you're really passionate about this, and they'll say, well, yeah, I really am, and this is my life. I agree that I've heard a statement a while back that farmers should be some of the highest paid people on earth, and they really should, absolutely. Right now the highest paid farmers are big ag with the subsidies and tax breaks, unfortunately, and it should be the other way around. I think the local farms, and that, I believe, could be an answer, a partial answer or a partial piece to total food security for our area, folks, if the city fathers realized and could be somehow made to realize that these local farmers are our lifeblood, literally, you know. And, you know, if more and more people started eating locally, type 2 diabetes would plummet, obesity would go down, you would have, as you meant, happier people. If the government was supporting the farms with tax breaks and subsidies, the local farms, they could make a better living. Hence, the workers would be paid a living wage. They're happier. And it's just a big circle of community cooperation, you know? And
yeah. Oh my gosh. You said it so well. I couldn't have expressed it better. I think that what you're describing is may come across to some people as sort of this idealistic utopia or something that sounds kind of, you know, sort of fuzzy and all that. But what's really so critical about what you just said, Mike, is how imperative it is that we move in that direction. This is really an either-or choice. We can either choose to change the way we live in this world based around how we produce and consume food, or we can choose not to. And many people, I myself included, thought that, you know, many of these problems that we are facing in regard to climate change and epidemics of poor health or something that, you know, will work their way through, and hey, you know, we've overcome everything else, and we're smart, and we have all this technology, and you know, we're America, and we're strong, and we'll survive. You know, not to be a cynic, but none of that stuff is going to make a difference in terms of the severity of these things that we're facing. We have entered into a realm of really a threshold of no longer being able to turn back, and we have to change the way we produce food, the way we consume food, the way we live our lives. And so a lot of this is really based around getting back to the part about, you know, farmers should be some of the most well-paid people, you know, in that category with teachers and firefighters and so on and so forth. And, you know, I think that it sort of, again, it speaks to, you know, what are our priorities in life. And we have become a culture that's built all around consumerism and making a lot of money. And so the priorities are misdirected, and the results have been, in some regards, they're becoming quite catastrophic in terms of our personal health, the health of the environment, the health of the climate. And so those are all issues that they're just not going to go away. And there are some amazing things happening. And, you know, I do want to speak to sort of, again, this sort of issue of climate change, because a lot of people are starting to understand that. And, you know, you just even look at what's happening in the world in the last, and we now have another hurricane out in the Gulf of Mexico. And so, you know, I think there are people who continue to be naysayers, but a growing number of people are certainly recognizing the what's happening with global warming. And it is indeed a, for those who don't believe in it, I think all you have to do is really look at the facts. And the facts are that the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is the highest that it has been, at least since before the last ice age. So we're going back, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. And in fact, they look back beyond 2 million years, this is the highest that it has been, and it actually has accelerated in the last 200 years since the advent of the Industrial Revolution. So we have a problem, and what's happening then is we have this sort of feedback loop that is continuing to make the problem worse. So you know, we can convert all of our fossil fuel usage to alternative energy, and those are very necessary steps that we must take, but that's still is not going to, if we did all that and we did nothing with food, we're going to still be in the same boat.
Absolutely.
So the way we produce food is so critical. It's such a critical part of the overall equation.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. You boy, oh boy, you know, that is just so, so true. Let me play a little bit more of what went on in City Market. Okay. Oh, my. Oh, I know. I wanted to play this again. This is Carter Wallace. He was the farm manager at Farfield's farm. And he really kind of hit the nail on the head, so to speak, exactly what we're talking about right here. Just recently. So here he is.
Fantastic. Now, Carter, I mentioned earlier about food as medicine, and you actually said that you like to think of it more as agriculture as medicine. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think probably like most people, I had a more specific calling to sort of redirect my attention and, you know, physical labor and such toward being more involved in agriculture as a producer. And then when you follow one specific calling, it opens up to a number of different callings. So for some people, it's maybe it's in a digestive disorder, you know, that says, hey, I got to figure something else out. This is not working in my diet. For some people, it's just a disconnection from nature, and they follow that. For some people, it's just an aversion to pesticides on their apples. You know, I think what I've found is, particularly as we think about food as medicine, or as I observe the what might be posted about widely, you know, food as medicine, it's a very true statement, and there's a lot in there, and it's really a gateway statement. It's a gateway to consider far more about what food is, and it's a gateway to consider not just what we eat, but how we eat it. And when one starts considering that, the desire to have a good apple, an apple that tastes good perhaps, or an apple that doesn't have pesticides on it, or an apple that built soil in the production of the apple as opposed to lost it. You start to really unravel a whole host of questions, and that is an invitation to a culture of the as medicine more than just the food as medicine. When we desire a really healthy food product, generally, and I can't say I could think of a counterexample to this, we're going to find that that's going to lead us all the way back to an entirely different lifestyle. And really, you know, when you think of some, there's plenty of examples of really impressive yogis and such that might eat an incredibly simple blend that would shock your nutritionist, and you're like, how could you be alive on this? You know, as we mature and down that path of food as medicine, I think everybody comes to understand that it's not just what you eat, but how you eat it. We're not just what we eat, we're how we eat. And we're not just how and what we eat, we're how and what we consume. And so our the dollars that we spend obviously are an amazing immediate implication on the landscape around us.
True.
To pay for a thing is to encourage that thing to continue to exist in the world. So does that thing build soil, or does it send soil down the river to the Chesapeake? What agriculture is, the production of food, fiber, things useful to human people from our land and seas, really generally understood, that at the core of it, in the way in which we engage agriculture most commonly every day is eating. Eating is an agricultural act, to quote the great sage. And eating also the most intimate engagement with nature on a day in, day out basis. Nature becomes us, and we literally project ourselves onto nature. Nature literally takes the image of what we are encouraging of it. So what we find with this, with the idea of food as medicine, is it is a gateway drug. It's a gateway path. It's a lure. It's a fish hook for us to be grabbed and ask, what is really making me sick? What is it? Is it really just apples? Because guess what? There's a lot of impressive people who have some seriously open chakras, who don't eat nearly enough to that I would even say should keep them alive, and they're doing just fine, right? So there's something else that sustains us. There's something else that sustains culture. There's something else that brings us happiness than, say, needing a certain organic food or needing this and that. And oftentimes, the food as medicine can become an anxiety, you know? So that's not to say anything of this is wrong. It's all just complex, and it's rich, and it's an invitation to go deeper. And that's why I think it benefits us. And, you know, if you're not there, sorry to spoil the ending. But if you are, then you can bask in this. It's really agriculture as medicine more than it is food. But you got to start somewhere. And for some people, that's food. For me, that was a huge part of it. Wherever you are on the journey, I hope you keep walking.
Well, that gives us an awful lot to think about, Carter. And folks, I encourage you to look more into eating the right things, yes, but also, you know, as Carter said, becoming part of everything around, you know, through yoga, through meditation, whatever your pathway is great. And I just wanted to thank Carter for everything you've given us this morning. Have you got anything else for us, Carter?
Well, you know, these are powerful times we're in. And if there's anything that I feel like I'm meditating on in this season, it's solidarity with the First Peoples of this nation who are putting their bodies and putting their everything on the line to protect water. And water really is quite the meditation. When we think about what water is as a purifier, as a solvent, as a barometer of the health of human culture, are our lives making water more clean or more impure? What is the downstream impact of our life? How is water life? You know, the great naturalist Aldo Leopold said, the water cycle and the life cycle are one, right? And then in the Lakota tradition, the anthem is Mani Wakoni, water is life, right? So how can we look into our religions to pull out that an understanding of that sacrality to enhance the way we experience and use and abuse water? How can we restore a sacred relationship?
That is so true.
Fantastic.
You know, I'll tell you the about the water. It's like I've always said, if you know, when starting our great nation, if we had said, okay, what do we need to survive? We need clean water, clean air, and clean food. And if any action by anyone affects that in a negative way, then that action should not happen. I wanted to ask you one other question. Or you were mentioning something with when Carter was talking about Michael about.
What Carter said was fantastic, and I would just sort of add to what he said about, you know, food really, it's really, I think what we're talking about when we talk about sort of regenerative agriculture and everything built around it is really a way of living, and it does encompass more than just what you put in your mouth. It's really about all the decisions that you make, and it also really is not about just eating a certain way, whether you're, you know, there are people who who choose to be vegan and vegetarian, people who need to be gluten-free, I guess, for whatever health issues they're having, or choose to be gluten-free, and all these different dietary restrictions, some of which are, you know, personal choice or whatever it might be. People, I think it's important for them to remember when they make those choices that it's really fundamentally about how the food is produced. And so I tell this a lot to people who, you know, do choose a vegan diet, that being vegan can certainly make a positive difference in the world, but at the same time, you can't turn a blind eye to the way food is produced, because there's certainly a lot of vegan food that is produced with chemicals and pesticides and GMOs, and is not focused on these issues that we've been talking about here in the last hour. So, you know, again, I think it's really, when we talk about regeneration, we're talking about a lifestyle that does encompass some of the things that Carter was talking about. And for many people, you know, it is also a spiritual process, and it looks beyond, again, just the food that we put in our mouth, the food that's on our plate, but all these other issues that are tied in, from water, soil health, and the health of local civilizations as well. So that's so important.
That is so important. Folks, you've been listening to Your Health right here at 94.7 WPVC, airing each Saturday morning from 11 to 12. Of course, I always go to the city market. You can catch me down there most Saturdays, as long as till it's open. I guess through December, they have the holiday market that goes
through
December, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Michael's down there as well,
almost every Saturday.
End up bumping into him. And so I just wanted to remind you guys to stay tuned for El Club del Sabor this afternoon. Got some great Spanish music for you. All right. Well, we're out.